If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
I'm only going to tell you this once.
That is now your chair, Captain.
My friends, the great experiment.
The greatest trick.
Headed. Trick.
Would you look at that?
The greatest trick.
Astronauts are some kind of Star Trek.
The greatest Trek.
Welcome to Greatest Trek. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
It's an off-season episode. Let's introduce our guest. From screen, from stage, from college auditorium, from YouTube.
Oh, that sewer.
From all over the place. He's Adam Ragusa. He's... You know what? I buried the best credit of all. Friend to me and Ben.
Yeah.
Friend for a long, long time. Adam Ragusa. Welcome to the show.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Thank you for being here.
Best friends forever.
Why do you put up with us? First question, Knoxville.
I was actually trying to remember that because I remember there was one point really early on in Greatest Gen existing that you came and stayed at my apartment in New York, the Goose. And I don't remember how we knew each other well enough at that point for me to be like, yeah, you can sleep in my apartment.
It's hard to imagine the Goose ever going through a hard time and then needing a place to crash and for him to be that desperate to crash at your place, Ben.
Right there, that's the privilege of a man who's that tall, that he can just invite other men to his house without first assessing whether he can best them in battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could probably best him in battle.
I think that we must have met either through Sarus Farivar, good friend to all of us, good friend to everyone.
Yeah.
Or through Jesse Thorne, another good mensch of menches, right?
Yeah.
I think, you know, there was some kind of orbit there. And I was listening to the show from the beginning because I read Sarus's article about it. That's how many people got on board. I think that all you had for music at that point was Dark Materia, and no one knew if Dark Materia was a noun or a verb or plural singular, you know, gendered in what way. No one knew what a Dark Materia is or how to reach a Dark Materia.
We did exchange emails with Dark Materia very early on. I think we were probably... I think probably right before the Ars Technica article dropped, we were like, hey, we should probably like make sure it's cool that we're using this music on this podcast we weren't expecting anyone to listen to. And somehow we found their email and emailed them, and they sent back like a one line, like, go for it, go sick, I don't care.
Yeah, you make sure you get the timeline right on that, buddy.
Yeah.
Goose, it looks like you're recording from your grow operation.
My grow operation, I know.
How is it going in the greenhouse?
It's the best. I've not yet shown it to any people in my audience, but...
Cool.
Are we going to be available to the people on home video on your channel with this episode?
We are making history live on videotape today.
Okay, all right, videotape and laser discs. Got it. Okay.
If you're uncomfortable with this, we can just say it's a green screen.
You know what? Because I tried to get fucking professional. I put a backlight on me, right? So check that out there.
Yeah.
Like, but I feel like that's making me look green screened because it's giving me a rim, like a rimlet thing that I thought would make me look like the submarine in the other submarine movie that we like, not Hunter Red October.
Crimson Tide.
Crimson Tide, yeah.
One of the most difficult things you can do is give yourself a rim, but I think I think you look great over there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. But speaking of this space and of particular interest to your viewers and listeners, and maybe I'll give you guys a shot of this to edit in for home video, is I put in a fish tank, like in a cattle trough, right?
Uh-huh.
And I put like the filter and the air stones and the, you know, the pumps and everything I was able to put under the floorboards so you don't hear anything. All you hear is the burbling in here.
Nice.
That's nice.
So I'm growing aquatic plants in there, and then I've got room for some fish. So
you're doing aquaponics?
Yeah, so I'm doing aquaponics, and so I've got some room for some fish in there. And well, there's one there now named Gracie, and then there will be another named George.
Of course.
And I've got the sign from the bus on the side of the fucking trough. Which was really hard to do because when that, you know, see George and Gracie, have a whale of a good time, Sausalito Aquarium, right? Like when that appears on the side of the bus in Star Trek 4, it's in like really deep perspective. So I had to like learn how to like, cause now you can like re-perspective images really easily in Photoshop, but I didn't know how to do that. So I was like, I had to like stretch this shit around and then you could kind of tell, you can still kind of tell that like the left side of it was in, was behind the focal plane a little bit, but it still looks pretty badass. But the reason I mentioned all of that was that it's like, I sent it to like, you know, signs.com or whatever, hashtag not necessarily signs.com. I sent it to, you know, signs.com or what have you, or similar concern. And they wrote back and they were like, we can't print this. This is like kind of blurry and, it won't look good.
Since when is science.com concerned about how good it looks?
We've never gotten that kind of pushback from the company that makes all the stuff on podshop.biz.
I'm not even trying to fucking make merch out of it. Or like, I would understand if they actually wanted to like, you know, make sure that their brand wasn't going to be on like a shitty t-shirt. I would actually understand that. But this is like one time personal purchase. And I was like, why? And they were like, it's going to look blurry. And I was like, it's going to look blurry because it was in deep perspective in the movie and I had to flatten it out. And so the left side of it was kind of behind the focal plane. And, and then like, it was like a half an hour of discussing that with like the human or the in India or the AI. I couldn't figure out which it was, helping me out here. And eventually they were, and I was just like, look, it's my money. I'm not going to blame you. It's okay. And to my surprise, they relented. I kind of thought that this was just the administrative level of hell that I'd been consigned to, you know. But no, they kind of relented and they print, and it looks fucking bitchin'. It looks so good, this sign.
Strong work by the trusted signprinter.com people at the end of the day.
Way to take your money.
But your use of the term behind the focal plane sort of leads us to one of the topics we wanted to talk about today.
You know the greatest danger facing us is an irrational fear of the unknown. Unknown.
Black alert.
Unknown.
Black alert.
We all have, one way or another, found ourselves behind a camera and over the course of our careers. And we all grew up watching Star Trek The Next Generation and et cetera. And you actually had this pitch, Goose, like talking about the ways Star Trek made us think about cinematography before we maybe even knew what cinematography was. And I think that's a great topic for us because we love nerding out about film crap.
Yeah, and you guys actually kind of don't do it as much as you used to. It was a hallmark of early TGG and associated media properties because I think you guys, your heads were still very much in the space of doing production. You love to nerd out about the technical stuff, and maybe it was a bit of a crutch. You hadn't yet found that part of yourself that reviews Star Trek for a living while making of the Dicketh and the Farteth. like that thing, whatever you want to call it, had not fully been developed and birthed into the world at that point. And so you were falling back on doing kind of tech geek kind of talk, you know, but I miss a lot of the tech geek talk.
We've definitely seen that in our Apple podcast reviews. These guys used to talk about cinematography. Now they're just drunk idiots.
You're many orders of magnitude bigger than our show. How do you deal with your reviews?
I do not read them ever.
That's the policy.
I had to cut myself off.
Yeah.
I was very conscious that, like, that's how you get Stalin, you know? When cults of personality are formed and the leader becomes isolated, right?
Yeah. A lot of people don't know Adam Ragusa quietly has a bigger body count than Hitler, you know?
That's right. I tried to read the stuff early on because I thought you don't want to get cut off from reality. Mm-hmm. But reality was just too brutal, and it was just eating my life. And so yeah. I had to completely, get out of the game.
There's a total duality to it. We had a visit to Vegas for the Star Trek convention pretty recently, and
you got to come with us to that sometime, Goose. You'd love it.
Do I?
Yeah.
Vegas. Do I?
Vegas is of very little use to me personally as a place or a thing, and I love it. And it was like, it's especially fun for me and Adam because we're like there hanging with Friends of DeSoto, with people who listen to our show, which is not something that we get to do at an extended clip very often. You know, like sometimes we'll have a meet and greet at a show or like a one-on-one, but they're always brief. Like they're inherently brief because if it's happening on tour, we've got to, you know, pack up and get to the hotel so that we can get up early in the morning. And having like long, like actual human interactions with people that like the thing that we make was so great this year, especially.
Puts gas in the tank, man.
It does.
But also recall that FODs are not just anyone's FOD. Okay. They're not your father's FOD.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. No. Today's FODs are really special people. And you guys get lucky, you know. Although I will say, I think I'm realizing something, which is that since I have transitioned away, I used to do way more videos on YouTube than I do now, and I do way fewer. But I added a podcast that I do every week, that, you know, is insignificant in its audience compared to the videos. The videos are what pay for the whole operation, but the podcast has its audience. Mm-hmm. And what I'm realizing is I feel like that my pod audience, as it has coalesced, also as the show has sort of become whatever the fuck the show is, the audience I feel like is more similar to your audience, where it's like, it's my core people. Like podcasting is a medium, I think, because discoverability is so shitty for podcasts and always will be shitty for podcasts. What that creates is a little bit more of a dedicated bond between the audience and the content creator. And so what you have is more of a core only business model with podcasting. Whereas on YouTube, I have like core plus, where mm-hmm. I've got the like 50,000 people that will, you know, watch or listen to anything that I do. But beyond that, I have to earn.
And also Showtime, like for some reason. That's that's how that works.
That's right, exactly. Which means that at certain times of day, you can see boobs.
Right. That's such an interesting distinction, like the difference between a podcast audience and a YouTube audience. Do you have a name for them? Like we have FODs.
My sort of tagline is vinegar legs on the right. I tried to call them vinegar leggets, which I thought worked on a few levels.
Yeah, that's fun.
But, you know, much to my surprise, didn't really catch on.
Yeah.
But it's the kind of thing. It's like if the audience I'd started with was my core audience, then I think that probably would have worked. But because right. I was in the core plus business model, shit like that just didn't fly. Yeah.
Do you ever get the chance to in person with them the way Ben and I have been able to?
I am of a level of internet fame where I do get recognized in person most times I go out.
That's great. Or not.
It's very not great. And I want people to know, if you're an Adam Ragusa super fan and you would come up to me in at the grocery store or something, please know that like I'm not mad at you, and I don't think you're doing anything wrong by coming up and saying, hi, I love your work. Like, you're doing nothing wrong. That's what you're supposed to do. It's a me problem that that still makes me deeply uncomfortable, right? That is my fault.
Right.
That like there's this like, you know, guy at my gym who sort of, you know, did a very friendly and polite, you know, pleasure to know you thing. You know, this was gym bro protocol followed to a letter, right? And said he was a fan. I said, oh, that's great. But like, because I go there and he goes there, now I have to negotiate the fact that he and I theoretically know each other. And like, am I gonna do the acknowledgement when I walk by him? Am I not going to do the acknowledgement? Am I going to try to avoid the, like, and I, it's awful. I fucking hate it. It's like, I kind of almost want to get a different gym over it, which is again, that is like a me problem. Dude, if you're listening, that is not a you problem. Please do not feel bad. You have done nothing wrong. That's all me. But it still fucking sucks.
Yeah.
I don't like being famous is terrible. It's just bad. And I think that like I'm realizing that like this is why we're consigned to the hell that we are consigned to, where the only people who want to be famous are awful people.
It's like running for office, right?
It's people with narcissistic personality disorder or sociopaths.
Yeah.
And that's it pretty much, you know. Those are the only people who want it. And it's, yeah, if you're any shade of normal, not awful person, even a slight little bit of fame feels kind of awful. Yeah.
Well, fortunately for us, fame was thrust upon us. We were not the thrusters.
You guys took it. You took it like a champ though, especially because it was Klingon. So it was a double and you guys just lined up perfectly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Dan Savage always says, do your homework, and that's really the key to success.
That's what Ben said early on. He was like, we're going to get Star Trek famous. Now we're Star Trek famous. We have been Star Trek famous. And that's what made the whole experience so pleasurable.
We live by the adage, DTMFA, do Trek media fun already.
Yeah. That's famous.
You know the greatest danger facing us is an irrational fear of the unknown.
Let's fly.
The uncertainty.
Let's steer back to cinematography. I had a jazz gummy and a bunch of rum before we started this. I feel like I'm like the most on.
I feel like we're in a driver's ed car with three steering wheels somehow. Yeah.
I have jazz gummied too, but I'll drive your show if you need me to.
I love that idea.
I'm kind of curious to hear like why that idea came up for you, Goose, like when we were texting about like what we could do if we all got on mics together today. This idea came from you, and I definitely can think of some things that I learned about cinematography from Trek and that like Trek forced me to be curious about as a kid when I didn't know what cinematography was.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to hear from you what those things are.
I'm guessing that Pranica's experience is similar and mine is going to be the odd person's out because I'm so not a visual thinker, you know, like it's just not important to me. Visuals ever really have been, you know. That I didn't pay attention to cinematography at all watching movies, when I was a kid. And then when I had a video job thrust upon me, I had to learn and learn really fast. And you guys helped me a lot along the way. But I reached back into my memory bin for sort of Star Trek knowledge. As I have over many points in my broadcasting career. I mean, I remember my first radio job when I was a classical music announcer at WFIU in Bloomington, Indiana. I remember thinking, this script I've been handed feels really stupid. Like this is not, none of these words are words that a person would say. But what I was like, it is my job. You know, they bring me in here to do a job. And what I thought of was I thought of Captain Picard. I thought about how J.L. Pipes would just commit to the most serious man in the world, the most serious actor in the world would commit to that ridiculous fucking techno babble. Or all, I mean, honestly, first two seasons, you know, all bets are off with all dialogue. It was all ridiculous. Yeah. And how he threw the fort, the, you know, the force of Shakespeare behind it without a hint of knowing, winking, which would be such a fucking cop out, you know?
Right. Or rolling his eyes at it.
Where he's like, where he's really throwing his show and everyone he's working with under the bus by kind of winking at the camera to show that he knows how fucking stupid this show is. Like, he could have done that, and he did not fucking do that. Shatner did that shit all the fucking time, you know? J.L. Pipes did, was a fucking professional. He committed to the bit every single fucking time. And so I remember reading my, like, you know, bad copy about, like, what opera is coming up next and trying to commit to it like J.L. Pipes would. So all of that comes to, like, now when I fall bass-ackwards into, like, a video career, not having any knowledge or even talent or inclination toward visuals whatsoever, I had to kind of learn. And I remember thinking about Star Trek stuff. And so the first thing that came to mind is, this is like my earliest knowledge of being aware that a camera did more than just show you what it looked like, that a camera would alter the reality in some way. So it was, the pilot of DS9 when Commander Sisko goes to see Picard, I believe, in the conference room, right?
Welcome to Bajor. It's been a long time, Captain.
We met before.
Yes, sir. We met in battle. I was on the Saratoga at Wolf 359.
Yeah.
And you see a set on the Next Generation, on the D, shot for a different show, Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks really different. And I remember as a kid that striking me. And I was like, oh, what is that? How does the show look different? It's the same place. It's the same actor. How does it look different?
Yeah.
Which, by the way, guys, why do they look so different? They're both shot on film, right?
They're both shot on film. I think that primarily they're lit really differently. And lit, like, the lighting in Deep Space Nine is so radically moody for a television show, even at that, in that era. I remember when I was a kid watching a movie and liking watching a movie on the, you know, VHS player, turning around and watching an episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation, be like, what is it about the quality of this that is so different? And I was surprised to learn that TNG was shot on film at some point when I was like a teenager, because I was like, oh, it must just be that they shoot TV on tape and that's why TV looks different from movies. And the fact that the, like, when you do a telecine where you're scanning 24 frame per second film to 30 interlaced frame per second video, it like there's like weird pull down things and like tricks that have to be played at the like microsecond level to like accommodate the fact that
that's artifact that we're seeing as some kind of like that sort of smoothing effect that seems to happen to the film once it gets processed into video.
Well, so when they're shooting for video, they're shooting at 30 frames per second. And when they're shooting a film, like when you then go to make the VHS tape of that film, like it's a complicated process with like a video engineer, like working that pull down. And like anybody who's ever tried to pull like an interlaced video into a digital editing environment and seen the interlacing artifacts knows that like a lot of weird fucking choices got made to like make color video be transmissible over the air in the like early days of television. And that stuff like had knock-on effects in all of the formats that we had for a long time. And it's things like that. It's things like the way you light for television versus a film. You know, like when you know that it's going out in, you know, 540 by 480 or something around there definition, like you don't usually light as moody as they lit Deep Space Nine, because people won't be able to see the stuff that's going on. You know, you light everything super bright.
Because it'll be higher contrast.
Yeah, and you know, you'll look as good as you can on the most different kinds of televisions, because also televisions are made by so many different manufacturers. And I mean, this is stuff that's all like, you know, like after a film school's worth of education, I understand like some of it and I understand like the basic outlines of it. But like, I remember being intensely curious about that as a kid. Like when I finished watching a tape of Star Wars and clicked over to the, you know, channel 44 broadcast of Star Trek, why do these things look as radically different as they do? And it's like, it's a mountain of reasons.
That scene, Goose, that you were talking about, that scene where Sisko meets Picard, I didn't really notice as much the differences in lighting or composition as much as I felt like the emotional telecine of that moment. Like,
wow.
We have our title.
You're saying it was all performance, and then I inferred like a different look to the shot? That's how well acted it was?
We've had years and years of Captain Picard getting react shots from everyone he's with and getting a version of that that's some kind of fawning or rank disparity or respect or whatever. And Avery Brooks looks at him in that scene like he wants to tear his head off. And that is not something as a kid I was used to seeing.
In the meantime, I will do the job I've been ordered to do to the best of my ability, sir. Dismissed.
Yeah, I think they also just shot it a little darker. I mean, because one thing that I now see and I'm able to notice as being remarkable is that TNG, later season TNG, I think from about season 3-ish onward, wow, did they light shit brightly for that show. Like, that is... If you like, I was watching a season 7 episode last night, and all the bridge shots, everybody's face, they look like they are lit up with a ring light for a L'Oreal commercial. Yeah. You know, like the amount of light that it takes to completely sandblast every shadow out of existence. No one has any wrinkles. Mm-hmm. There's no fine lines, nothing. You just sort of glow like an angel.
We just did our live show, The Re-Encounter at Farpoint, a couple of months ago, and revisiting the pilot, I was very much struck by how dark the pilot is. Like, the pilot has mood lighting, it has, you know, spotlights, it lets the background fall off to almost jet black in certain places. Like, I mean, talk about the battle bridge, that place is scary as hell.
Yeah, I know, exactly. I don't know why they ended up opting for such a bright look as they went, but there are several effects of it. One being that it made the Enterprise such a friendly, happy place to be.
Yeah.
Which is like the main thing that I miss in most other Trek, you know, that this isn't a scary place, that it's not they made a big thing out of it. This is not a ship of war. This is a place where there's a kindergarten here.
Yeah.
There's a fucking kindergarten here, right? Like, it's a city.
Sir, can you please leave the kindergarten if you're going to keep yelling, there's a fucking kindergarten here?
Sorry. It's the kind of thing, like, I feel like none of the other set designers, I feel like they're not thinking about, is this a ship? Have we talked about, is this a ship where families live?
Right.
Like, and if it is a ship where families live, like, what the fuck are we doing with the lighting in these corridors? You know?
People don't live in this leather bar.
Are we trying to traumatize these children? Like, what the fuck? And also, like, human beings are not going to want to live in conditions like this for years at a time. You know? It wouldn't look like that. It would look much brighter and more enjoyable, at least during, you know, solar day years.
I think Pike's Enterprise is the one version of new Star Trek that is lit brighter, more like early season TNG. Like, the fact that Pike's Enterprise has a white floor, I think, does a lot of the work.
Yeah, it could be that simple.
We need to score a lot of land fast.
Licensed businessmen.
This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Can we talk a little bit about the music you're working on for our coverage of Star Trek : Enterprise?
Oh, wow. I'm stuck back at colon, but we don't want to spoil it, right?
No spoilers.
It's not a spoiler to say that we're working on that.
It's a totally different approach, okay?
It's going to be divisive, I think.
Dark Materia, we thank Dark Materia for Dark Materia's long and generous service. But this is sort of going to be an approach that's not inspired by Dark Materia. It is a little bit more faithful to the source material. We're staying a little closer to the text. you know, because it's just...
What does it mean?
When the text is that good, you know, you just want to trust... You just want to trust this guy, you know, or mm-hmm. this lady, Diane Warren. The composer of the text in question, one of the great songwriters of all time, Diane Warren. Like, it's like,
wow, the internet sleuths have figured this out.
Her lyrics are written in red. That's how you know that she's the one saying them, right?
In certain sects, I think.
There's things about the upcoming new theme music for Greatest Gen that. I still don't know. I don't know what your guys' approach is going to be in terms of how it could potentially be rendered or who could be rendering it.
Yeah.
I hope to God it's someone other than me.
Well, the last time we collaborated on a music project, it was for the new music for Greatest Trek. And maybe we could talk about that experience as a project. I think we went through a couple of versions of that.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
The way we have frequently done something together has been like, we'll give you a couple notes before you begin, you'll take them and run with it, and then we'll just sort of bounce versions back and forth.
Sure, yeah. So let me catch people up. This will be the very short version about how we sort of got to that point in our process. So this podcast in your feed right now, The Greatest Trek, started off as a show called The Greatest Discovery. When they launched the Star Trek Discovery program and you guys weren't sure if you should have a new feed for that, you went with, yes, let's have a new feed for that, which I'm sure is a decision that you regretted at times and rejoiced in others. A lot of rejoicing now that there's so much new Trek, but then there's the strikes. So there's the strikes. So you guys might be screwed again. But anyways, we stand with labor. Yeah, solidarity, 100%.
Friends of DeSoto for labor.com.
Solidarity with labor, yes.
So anyway, so you guys needed a theme, like a kind of a Dark Materia style theme about this new Star Trek show called Star Trek Discovery for your podcast. And I was like, how do we do that? Because the show had not yet come out and you guys weren't yet famous enough that you were getting screeners, which, you know, thank the gods you are now.
I think it's not about us being famous. I think they just loosened up who gets screeners. I think kind of a lot of people get them now.
I think Diane Warren. I think she's responsible somehow.
whether you had to push harder or if they just had to loosen it up, the result was achieved either way.
Yeah.
So what we had was the trailer for Star Trek Discovery. And so right. I was like, okay, could I try to make a theme out of this, which not only has very little dialogue in it, it also, because it's for a trailer, there's like very loud scoring behind all of it, you know? And if there, whenever there's scoring behind the dialogue that I want to use, that creates enormous problems. It boxes me in terms of chord changes that I can do and all that.
Yeah.
It also was the case that, you know, that trailer was bad and it made the show look bad. And a lot of the dialogue that was in that trailer actually isn't even in the show. It was like stuff from earlier cuts that didn't even make it, you know? And it was all just supremely goofy. And so the best thing I could come up with was to kind of, I just kept hearing, you know, Captain Picard saying like, what the fuck is this? In response to shit that, you know, that Disco characters were saying. And I feel so kind of ashamed about it now because, you know, I love what that show became and the actors on it. My Jesus Christ, you know.
Yeah.
The notion that, you know, we got to touch Michelle Yeoh's toe as she ascended to superstardom.
I know.
You know, is pretty amazing. That's pretty incredible that we got to taste a little bit of that fairy dust on her way up to the fucking top where she belonged.
Yeah.
But anyways, so I made this kind of goofy music where it was these TNG characters making fun of these new Disco characters. And it was like a fun gag. And I was actually really proud of the music. I thought musically, my approach to dealing with all of the crazy background music was to do a more kind of atonal thing harmonically that would give me a little bit more latitude. So it's a little more bleep bloopy, you know, harmonically speaking. And it ended up being really kind of goofy and fun. And then the best part is like toward the end of it. And it always bothered me so much that you guys never played it. But I could never imagine being the kind of person who would say something about it. But it was always this continuous source of disappointment to me that I think Robs, who was editing the show at the time, never used it. That theme goes really high BPM toward the end. It goes like really, like, you know, really kind of trancy. Mm-hmm. And I did this thing where I did the you don't deserve to wear that uniform thing in the same way that Dark Materia did it, which is really that rhythm is not in, it's not in the line. A lot of these other lines, you know, the rhythm is in them,
right?
You know, inextricably. That one he really had to cut, he or she had to cut really creatively in order to get that beautiful rhythm. And I was able to do that and therefore have this like thing that was a text that was referencing a text that was referencing how a text referenced a text. And it was just, I loved that. And I was so proud of that. And you guys never played it. So fuck you, Robs.
Oh, how could you say that?
But anyways, so that was that. And it served the show well enough. But I think we were all kind of unhappy with how that theme music made fun of the show, right? It made fun of Star Trek Discovery. We didn't like that. And we also didn't like that it made fun of Disco in exactly the wrong way to make fun of Disco. Like like Disco is not a perfect series, made a lot of really bad choices. You know, there's things to make fun of with Disco, but like the gatekeepery shit, the that's not my Star Trek shit was just the worst.
Right.
And the theme that we came up with, really, I shouldn't pin this all on you. The theme that I came up with.
It's you and Rob's.
Get him, Adam. Get him.
It wasn't gatekeepery humor, but it was unfortunately like harmonious. It was it resonated unfortunately with gatekeepery bullshit
in an unintended kind of way. I think
absolutely 100%. You know,
it was pointed out several times, and you know, in several ways that was an inference someone could make based on like if they gave a really close reading to what wound up being the lyrics of that song.
Dislike, downvote. Yeah. So you guys, you know, wanted me to sort of do something, and two things were happening. One was it was when all these new Trek shows were coming online, and it was just like, God, which characters do we feature? who's going to be the exciting Trek character this week that you're going to want in your theme song 5 years from now?
Right. And how do we make it a song that can accommodate like the shows that we don't even know are happening yet?
That are going to exist. Yeah, exactly. So we had no good solution to that question. And at the same time, it was also the case that like, you know, my career was taking off and like, and you guys were like super encouraged. You were, you know, you guys were my biggest cheerleaders and
I wanted a ride on that rocket ship.
So yeah, I didn't have time to make a better theme song for you guys. And we also didn't know how to do it, even if I did have the time. Right. So eventually you guys were like, sure you were going to do this, relaunch the show, rebranded as Greatest Trek. And I was not going to fuck this up for you this time. So I committed to giving you guys a theme, and the plan that we came up with that I thought was good, was to like not really have many of New Trek voices in theme, have it all be classic OG original cast, maybe a little bit of Greatest Gen. But what they're doing is saying things about the future.
Yeah.
And trying to find dialogue that would be an antidote to gatekeepery Trek bullshit. Where they're talking about how the greatest Trek is yet to come, how, I'm delighted to look forward to what the future holds. And because those are defining foundational themes of Star Trek, it's not hard to find dialogue where our beloved original characters are articulating that foundational point of view that all the fucking Trek gatekeepers have forgotten.
Even if the context for those moments is awkward or weird, like one of my favorite parts of the Greatest Trek theme is what you did with Old Man McCoy's She'll Always Take You Home. Like, that is the most smooth delivery in that composition. Like, when that interstitial comes up and I'm driving, I'm even more chill of a driver.
Yeah,
wherever I am. That is just a great moment in that composition.
It responds to a way in which Trek sort of teaches you to like how to be a fan of it, because I've always said not my Star Trek, and it's because I don't believe that the best Star Trek show has yet been made. Oh!
Hey! You fucker.
How long were you holding on to that mic? Under the desk.
I found the mic nearby. I was thinking, hey, we're making a video thing. We should do a couple of video gags, you know?
That was big fun. See, Goose, you could learn something from that kind of physical comedy showmanship.
Yeah, I know. Not my forte.
The biggest comedy reveal was the fact that I'm wearing these ridiculous shorts.
And then chubbies? You got some chubbies? You got them chubs?
I'm wearing Nantucket Reds with little whales embroidered all over them.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. Lean into the prep, Harrison. Lean into the fucking prep. Get a fucking sailboat. Get it.
I want a sailboat
so
bad. Get
a sailboat.
I live on the east side, man. I never go to the water.
Yeah, the best you can do is the swan paddler at Echo Park Lake.
Will you vacation on Nantucket with me?
Oh, I'm there.
Am I invited too, or is that just Ben?
Yes, you can. You can, but it's mostly about watching what Ben does, right? Like, that's the promise of the premise.
Cape Vineyard or Nantucket, I'm happy to do any and all of. I will eat all of the lobster rolls. I will bake all of the clams.
None of that lobster is sustainable this year, says seafoodwatch.org, so don't do that.
Fuck.
Oh, bummer.
But also stop talking about that the minute you enter New England. Like, that's an understanding that we have to get between ourselves now before the plane lands at Logan, okay?
I do not want a fucking Boston sports fan who riding on me for saying the wrong thing.
How did we know we had the Greatest Trek theme when it was done? Was that just one of those things where a deadline tells you when you're done, or did we know we had it?
I wanted it to have carry over some musical identity from the previous theme, the Greatest Discovery theme, A, for continuity, and B, because musically I just liked that one. Yeah. So I had that kind of goofy little figure. And when I found a way to make that silly ass theme, that figure, sound kind of grand enough to work in the context of kind of an uplifting and hopeful orchestral Trek-y sounding theme, that's when I felt like I had found the right idea to then work out and send to you guys.
I love how modular it is. I love how it like works for the different shows in the different ways it works for them. Like tonally, these shows are all so different, and I feel like our theme is fun alongside all of those tones. Whatever thing we're about to talk about. So we feel awful lucky to have the musical director of Uxbridge Shimoda be somebody as awesome as you, Goose.
And fortunate to count you as a friend, man. We really love you, and we're glad to have you not just as an FOD, but as a real-life friend of ours. So glad you're there.
Well, boys, so maybe now is a good time to broach a difficult topic. So you understand that as much as you depend on me, I depend on you, right? Like the shows that you make, that's like, did your dad have like his one thing that he paid attention to that he never let go of throughout his whole life? You know, his one magazine that he never stopped reading. Like for my dad, still it's Time Magazine. That man will not give up Time Magazine, right? Just because it's too important of a thing in his life. Like he just couldn't, I think he doesn't know how he would get himself to sleep without his Time Magazine.
Does it look like it's too thick to be a Time Magazine and maybe there's another magazine inside of Time?
God, it would serve him right for his intrusions into my business in that regard.
What the hell? You've been reading Harper's Bazaar the whole time?
So, Greatest Gen and Greatest Trek, these programs are baked into the cake of my life. I don't know what I would do with various times of my life. You know, it's part of my collective. To extricate it would be like asking one of us to cut off an arm or a foot. We couldn't do it.
Tremendous.
These programs can never die as long as until I do, really, okay, is what it boils down to. So
you're proposing some sort of suicide cult?
No. It may come to that, but hopefully we're a few revolutions from that. So I don't know if you guys were thinking about whether or not your audience would tolerate you guys watching all of Star Trek Enterprise and then watching all of the original series and then rotating back around to do TNG again.
Oh, yeah. I want to do that. That's the end of the line.
Just have confidence that we are 100%. All I speak for the entire board, okay? The entire union is behind me on this, okay? As the union representative on the board of Uxbridge Shimoda, I, Adam Ragusea, give you our full faith and authorization that you continue the mission over again for at least one additional revolution.
I absolutely live for rewatching TNG.
Yeah, I want to do that.
Oh, thank God. I was so afraid that you guys were going to be like, oh, we just want to like move on with our lives. And it's just, we don't want to get typecast, you know.
I'm handcuffed to the radiator that is this show.
Okay. Oh, thank God.
There's just a dull hacksaw and a filthy toilet next to me for the rest of my life.
And you know that you can watch all of the original series, even though you've covered a lot of original series episodes on The Greatest Trek. That's fine. Over in TGD, you can do a full honest to God watch of the original series.
We need to do it sequentially. Yeah.
In that earlier metaphor, Adam, am I the dull hacksaw or am I the dirty toilet?
What do you want to be?
And which one's the goose?
The real litter says that you always want to be the hacksaw, right? But
sure.
But you'd rather have the dirty toilet. So I kind of feel like, you know, there's more to life than resale value is all I'm saying, lady. Okay. It's not an investment. I'm going to fucking live in it. All right. Thinking about your home as an investment is what got us into this fucking mess.
Is this a new shirt for us? This is like...
It's the emojis of handcuffs, radiator, hacksaw, dirty toilet.
Greatest gen.
There's a dirty toilet emoji, right?
Yeah.
Kind of realtor looking lady?
Adam Ragusa, where can people find you?
Oh, I'd rather they didn't.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm honestly as famous as I want to be. I'd be fine having no additional.
Your credits include the theme song to Greatest Trek and the theme song to.
I wrote the Kirk song for all of your tour spots. That's an underrated Ragusa composition. I think people wanted to listen to that one a little bit more. I think I did a good job on that one. The Kirk song.
You got us Santa Monica Mountains. You rounded that into shape, didn't you? Or did you just teach me how to auto-tune my own voice? I know you were instrumental in me sounding that specific way.
I gave you guys a mix on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun. That was a lot of fun. I would listen to that. I would listen to that for fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great track. Hot track.
When we were in Vegas, we went to karaoke, and Pranica and I did a rendition of the original Baywatch theme.
With the lyrics from the show or from your show?
We couldn't do it off the top of the dome from our show, so we did the
lyrics
from the show.
Oh, yeah, you needed the bouncing ball.
Yeah. But,
some
hey,
people need. I love how he goes to hep somebody to hep. It's like he needs a HEPA filter.
Jimmy Jameson's a hep cat.
Yeah.
Some people need to hep somebody.
Yeah, just surrender
inside. Don't right. you worry.
Goose, you gotta go, ooh, man. There's priority one messages. We gotta hang up.
Oh, give me them P1s. Put it
Knoxville,
in the one.
We're out of time.
Put the one into the other one.
How are we kicking the goose off of our show?
Fucking do it. Put the P's in the ones. All the ones into the P's.
Not even close.
Flip the peas around so they look like bees. Fuck, put the one in there. Oh! All right, I'll cut it off there.
Goose, we love you tons, man. We'll have you back on the show soon because it's strike season and we're not doing new programming for a bit.
Well, there's a new ship. You treat her like a lady. You treat her like a lady. She'll always bring it home.
Well, a wide-ranging conversation had with Adam Ragusa.
Yeah. Not sure if we actually achieved any of the goals we set out for ourselves.
I'm not sure anything in the priority one message inbox would surprise me after that, Ben. You want to go see what we got in there?
Let's do it.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Ben, our first priority one message is from the Dith.
Oh.
And it is to Captain Lesotho.
Okay.
The message goes like this. Dear Captain Lesotho, go fuck yourself. Just kidding. I accept your invitation and I promise not to pee in the pool. Kisses, the Dith.
Oh, shit. It's on for 2024.
So this is a callback to a P1 we got last month from Captain Lesotho to the Dith with an invitation to Star Trek Las Vegas 2024. And the Miriam pool parties that will most assuredly take place there.
Yeah, we had a great time in the Pranica Cabanica this year, but
you
next...
let out just a little bit of pee in the Rio, you saw the blue food coloring, and you're like, nope, gotta get out of the pool. Gotta go do it in the pool shower, like a gentleman.
Right, exactly. No, that was actually just, I had some blue food coloring in the pocket of my my trunks that opened
what
accidentally.
What a bit that would be! Oh, man, has anyone done that?
I mean, the Rio pool is the place to do it, right?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, because you know they wouldn't clear out that pool for any reason.
Okay, here's the thing. Adam and I won't remember this after we stop recording tonight.
Yeah.
So This is on the Friends of DeSoto. Everyone that comes to Pranica Cabanica 2024, get one of those little weird droplet-shaped blue food colors.
I can't co-sign this. This is going to be entered into evidence in a lawsuit. And Ben, you don't win a lawsuit against a casino. Don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely scared of a casino that's going out of business.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to be an idiot to operate a failing casino.
Yeah. Well, we'll see you next year, Captain Lesotho and the Dith. Our next Priority One message is from Greg, Chief Medical Officer, and it is to military FODs, and it goes like this. After serving three tours as a medic and medical officer, SNW Under the Cloak of War caught me off guard. I couldn't finish it and wanted to remind FODs of resources available to them. Military One Source, 800-342-9647. Veterans Crisis, dial 988, then 1, or text 838-255. It gets better, get help, and we are better off with you here with us. Hey, Greg, thank you for an important reminder and definitely something we should have probably put a content warning on before that episode. And thank you for sharing those numbers.
Yeah, it makes me wonder why Strange New Worlds itself didn't put a content warning there. I think it might have been a project where after you complete it, you're just unaware of how extremely on target you are with your depiction. Like, I don't know if I'm involved in Strange New World's production of that episode. Like, I feel like I'm making a good episode during, but you will never know Greg's personal experience, and you'll never know exactly how it'll hit if you're in the military. Like, I really wonder how it felt to be the creator of such an episode and to see how it didn't always hit in the way you intended.
I mean, yeah, man.
We don't have control about how our podcast hits.
Yeah.
That's like part of the mystery of creating anything.
Yeah. One of the things that we like really do try to do is think ahead of how it will hit in as many ways as we can from our like limited perspectives. And I think this is probably an example of one where we like probably could have anticipated that a tiny bit better.
A very surprising coincidence that such a serious and useful message was sent during the Adam Ragusea episode. Which means we should probably put another content warning before this episode.
Yeah. Warning. In this episode, Ben will suggest people bring blue food coloring to the Rio pool next year, and Adam will strongly disagree.
Adam infers some sort of suicide pact completely out of the context of the conversation being had.
You're gonna trigger someone! You're gonna get a bunch of people kicked out of a bad pool!
Greg, thanks for the P1, and thanks to everybody who gets a P1. It's MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron to do that, and we really appreciate it.
Let's not do Edward Larkins. I think it's pretty clear that the Goose was today's Larkin.
Goose is the Larkin today. There can be no other Larkin.
Not because of anything you did wrong, just for being his purest self tonight. That was a really fun hang with him. We don't get to hang out enough.
We don't get to hang out enough, and I think that I think that'll be a real fun one for the fans of his show, the Vinegar Leggets out there, to see him as loose as he got tonight.
yeah, that was big fun. Can't wait to see him out on tour at that Atlanta show.
Yeah, we've got lots of fun stuff coming up. Adam, we got one last bit of business we need to attend to before we go today, and that is a warning bois. Do you want to pull one up?
Sure can, Ben. But why do we even read these?
Warning bois are a way that people go online and encourage the right kind of folks to listen to our show and discourage the wrong kind of folks to listen to our show.
Sort of like a content warning.
Yeah. You post on social media in a way that makes it clear what the vibes are.
Prepare a buoy and launch it when ready.
Warning buoys.
An emergency buoy. A warning buoy.
Ben, I'm going to read you something from Apple Podcasts.
Oh, great.
Apple Podcasts is one of the places that really puts us in the sweet spot algorithmically. Mm. When we get good reviews there. Here's the headline to that. This podcast changed my life. It's from Catastrophe, spelled with a K and an I, like Kit, like the car from Knight Rider.
Uh-huh, okay.
All right. Sure, people think I'm confirming my planned attendance at funerals and that I don't know that Miriam is a woman's name, but the pod encourages me to watch episodes of Trek with a new eye. Those two being references to RSVP and my repeated mispronunciation of myriad. Both intentional. The message continues, I never would have noticed camera angles or recognized the that guy supporting actor if not for this podcast. It's the next best thing to having actual friends to nerd out about each new episode of Star Trek with.
Oh, man. Catastrophe. You rule.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a nice thing to say.
We really appreciate everybody that leaves a nice 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or whatever place online you can think of to recommend the show. And if you do it, we might find it and mention it here on the Warning Boys segment sometime in the future.
Yeah, get the word out. Really does a lot of good.
With that, we are going to throw the episode over to Rob Adler, and he will read you some credits.
The Greatest Trek is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. It's hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica, produced by Wendy Pretty, and this episode was edited by Rob Adler. Next week, Ben and Adam will be talking about the Season 4 premiere episode of Lower Decks. Don't miss it! Thanks again to our special guest, Adam Ragusea, who made our theme music and interstitial music. Don't forget to check out his YouTube page and podcast. You can keep up to date with us on social media by following @GreatestTrek. And a big thanks to the car daddy, Bill Tilly, who runs those accounts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week for another episode of Greatest Trek.
Maximum Fun, a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.